Welcome to another evening in the Michigan Writers Series. I'm Jane Arnold, your host for the interview portion, and our guest this evening is Linda Nemec Foster, whose poems have been widely published in national journals such as the Georgia Review, Mid-Atlantic Review, Quarterly West, Indiana Review, Nimrod, and River Styx. Her work has also appeared in major anthologies from Penguin, Virago, Macmillan, among others. Her poetry has been translated, theatrically produced for the stage, and exhibited in art galleries in New York and Michigan. She is the author of 3 poetry chapbooks, A History of the Body, A Modern Fairy Tale, The Baba Yaga Poems, and Trying to Balance the Heart. Her full-length collection of poems, Living in the Fire Nest, was published in 1996 by Ridgeway Press and was a finalist for the Blue Stem Poetry Award and the Nicholas Rurick Poetry Prize. She is the former director of the literature program for the Urban Institute for Contemporary Arts and currently teaches poetry workshops for the Creative Writers in Schools project. Thank you for participating in the Michigan Writers Series.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks for inviting me and having me today.
Tell us about Living in the Fire Nest. It was received very well,
yes.
And it must be a great satisfaction to
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, yes.
I'm curious about the title.
The title is actually from a line from one of the poems, and the poem is entitled Poem for 4 Children Dead in a Fire in Detroit, based, unfortunately, on a real incident that happened when I lived in Detroit in the late 70s, early 80s. I won't go into the details of the tragedy, but there was a house that caught on fire down the block from where I lived, and unfortunately, 4 children were trapped and never made it. The very end of the poem, there's lines all around you. You are now smoke slowly entering this dark sky. All around you, the stars live in their fire nests. And when I was going through the book to try to find a title, which sometimes is more difficult than writing poems, is trying to find a title for them or a book, that image really haunted me. And there are some people who look at that image as being a very brave and positive statement, but it really is a very poignant angst-ridden statement. And
yes.
And I really think that it just captured what I hope the book and the poems in the book do for the reader, that is balanced between the danger of things like the fire nest
mm-hmm.
or like just day-to-day living
mm-hmm.
and just affirming the courage it takes to live our lives, whether they're heroic lives or the mundane life of watching La Dolce Vita in your living room, you know, on the TV. So I really thought that title perfectly balanced those, you know, two things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes making a stand when sometimes it's difficult to do so, but I think that bravery of living in a fire nest, living where things maybe aren't so comfortable, is what
the image is a
yes.
very uncomfortable
yes,
one.
Yes, yes.
But I see how you use it to pull together the poems in
right.
the, what are there, 4?
There are 5 sections.
Five sections.
It's a very generous book, as my editor says. Very generous book. A lot of bang for your buck,
oh,
you know, with
yes.
this book. But
yes.
And I've always admired irony in poetry or in any good creative
mm-hmm.
writing. And I think the irony of the title also
mm-hmm.
Lives through a lot of the
mm-hmm.
spirit of the poems.
Mm-hmm. You teach poetry writing.
Yes. Yes, I do.
What's most difficult to students who really want to write? How can you teach an art that requires crafting as well as imagination?
Absolutely. Most of my writing has been done, as you mentioned, for Creative Writers in the Schools, which
mm-hmm.
is a project of the Michigan Council for the Arts. And that's where you teach anywhere from K through 12. You'll go in for X amount of weeks or months for residencies. Now, those you're looking at younger children that are very enthusiastic
mm.
and want to
full
you
of
know,
imagination.
Right, right. Now I am now teaching at Aquinas College this current semester, an advanced poetry level poetry writing workshop, advanced
mm-hmm.
level, and Let me tell you, it's a different, you know, kettle of fish. And these students, and they're all very serious, there's about a dozen of them, and it's, as I said, an advanced level of workshop. The hardest thing to get them to do is to just break down those barriers that they put them, that they put up for themselves. I mean, no teacher has to do that for them, just like, this isn't good enough, I'm not a real poet, I can't write, I don't know anything. And I am so tired of hearing them preface, you know, their workshop pieces, oh, this sucks. And
this is only something I did, but.
Absolutely, and so the hardest thing is to get them to appreciate their own voice. Mm-hmm. And I've got 12 different voices in this advanced level workshop. As any, you know, poet or creative writing teacher, you know, could tell you, you have as many voices as you have in the class. And what is the hardest thing is to get them to accept that voice and make it better. For instance, I have a Vietnamese a refugee, a young woman who writes exquisite imagery, but sometimes she lets it get away from her, and she will go, her best strength is her best weakness too. And so my job is just to say, Anlan, you know, you've got these wonderful images, just develop them and don't worry about doing more and more and more on the page. I have someone else who's very good in narrative, very good with narrative poetry, but isn't that good with his lyric, mm-hmm. His lyric poems. So I think it's the test is respecting the individual voice of the student and get them to accept that and respect that and build on that.
Uh-huh.
Build on that.
Good. Back to your work.
Okay.
What kind of poems can be exhibited? Is it a matter of shape or?
Well, it's a matter of, you're talking about the art exhibits.
Yes.
All right. I'll tell you about the New York experience
first.
It was a national curated show for visual art and poetry. And this was sponsored by several colleges in New York, one in Long Island, one in Manhattan, one in Albany, and one, I can't remember where, it's somewhere other in another city in New York State. And I had never heard of this program before, but I read about it in Poets and Writers Magazine. I decided to submit, I'm not a visual artist, so I submitted some poems, and they had a theme. And the first year that I heard about the project, the theme was passion, anything to do with passion. So I submitted three. I submitted three poems, one of which is in Living in the Furnace, The Woman Taken in Adultery.
Mm-hmm.
Very controversial poem, I might add. I had students picket me outside of the classroom for that.
Good.
Absolutely. Anyway, but getting back to this exhibit, they had something like 800 pieces of art, and they just gave you that theme. And you could do two-dimensional work. This is a visual artist. You could do sculpture, photography, watercolor, acrylic, you know, you name it. And they had something like 800 submissions. They selected 50. Mm-hmm. And then of the poetry, they had 500 poems. They selected 20, and I was very pleased to have The Woman Taken in Adultery selected. And that year, the judge was Dana Gioia from, I believe he lives on the East Coast now. The second year, I also decided to submit. I thought, well, might as well see what happens. And it was the same kind of statistics. This time, the theme was hope. And one of my pieces called Men as Fathers was selected. I believe it's also in the book, and it was selected by Marvin Bell. He was the poetry judge for that year. And then unfortunately after that they lost their funding, so they only did it like for three or 4 years. But how it was exhibited, well, let me tell you how it was exhibited. We did go to the opening in Albany, New York, and it was at Sage College in the art gallery there. And I didn't know where my poem was going, what was going to be next to it, what visual art was going to be next to it. And they had all the visual art there displayed, and then they had all the 20 poems individually on broadsides, beautiful broadsides that they had typeset on heavy stock paper, matted and framed, looked lovely, and they were on the walls. And that is, you know, my long answer for your short question on how poems are displayed or exhibited in
what
a project
nice idea.
Like that.
What
it was
nice
wonderful.
Idea.
And then they had a wonderful catalog for both years, for the both years that I was involved, for the Passion exhibit and the Hope exhibit. And these catalogs were beautiful, and they listed all the poems, and then opposite on the page were various, you know, art pieces, mm-hmm. Either reproductions of the visual art or photographs if it was a sculpture mm-hmm. that was in the show. And these catalogs were just beautiful, beautiful.
That'd be something we could do here. We'll have to think about that.
Yes.
The Baba Yaga poems appeal
yes.
to me.
Yes.
They're chilling mm-hmm. and frightening and beautifully summoned images of this hag of death. I had to go look her up.
Yes, she is not your warm, fuzzy, feely
no,
witch. She's not the
isn't.
Good witch, Glinda, from like the Wizard
Were
of Oz.
You told these as a child because I got the feeling mm. that this would, you had the, they were in the dreams and there were spare and grim.
Yes.
And
two points of inspiration for the Baba Yaga poems. One was my heritage. I'm Eastern European. All four of my grandparents were born in southern Poland, and Baba Yaga creeps in to those folk tales and folklore in, though not just Russia. I mean, she's basically known as a Russian witch, but in Lithuania, in Hungary, in Poland, I mean, she crops up. So that was one facet of the inspiration. The other one was Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition. There is, I think, the second to the last piece. It's called The Hut of Baba Yaga. When I was a college student, way back when, one of my roommates was a music major. And she had to do this as a recital piece on the piano, Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition, which it was first, I think it was first meant to be a piano
yes,
piece,
was,
and
huh?
then Ravel orchestrated it for a full orchestra. Anyway, I was just, you know, listening to her play over and over, you know, this suite of music. I was always moved by the power, the emotion from not just the Baba Yaga sequence in that musical piece, but you know the whole breadth of Mussorgsky's composition. And when I began my MFA program at Goddard College in Vermont, I worked under Liesl Mueller, who is one of the premier, you know, poets writing in America today. She won the Pulitzer Prize 2 years ago, and she was such a strong advocate of folklore and myth and folktale as an inspiration for contemporary pieces of writing, not just mm-hmm. just poetry, but mm-hmm. fiction also. Mm-hmm. And so when she asked me, when I worked with her, she says, well, what's your passion? And I said, well, I've always loved myth and mythology and folklore. And then she asked me a little bit more about my background, and she says, well, do I have an assignment for you? And this is basically what she told me to do. Not only read original folk tales and fairy tales, which are, by the way, quite chilling. They're not your Disney sanitized versions. If you read the Grimm fairy tales, they are pretty grim. They're psychologically meant to teach morals and right from wrong. There is no gray. There is no life imprisonment. The good win, the bad die. They don't get sent to jail. They just, you know, die. And I was very impressed with how these folk tales, and I read a lot of them over a course of 2 years, not just original, but also very scholarly works are written by them, Stith Thompson, Andy Arn, mm-hmm. A wonderful folklorist who taught out of the Indiana University, and just reading what they had to say scholarly about what these myths tell us about our own lives and our own psyches, I was just very much you know, enthralled. And so when I wrote the Baba Yaga poems, it was during that time when I was doing that, not only the scholarly research, but you know, looking at the original primary mm-hmm. sources, mm-hmm. and Baba Yaga just kept on coming up, and I thought, oh, to have a witch have a name. You know, she had a formal name, and I thought, I want to do as much with her as I can.
Well, you certainly did. It's memorable.
Yes, thank you.
And it, The other section that I really, really liked, and I think because it is very, very accessible, and well, your poetry is quite accessible, I think. But one of the prose poems, the parts of the body.
Yes, the parts of the body. An interesting story about
as
that.
As I was reading, one of the poems, I got to the one, Bowels, and it was dedicated to somebody I once knew in college, who was a colleague,
Richard
Jansma. And the poem just opened up in front of me, and it was such a tribute to him in a way, because it was so amusing and yet all true. And then I went back and read it again, and it was him.
Yes. Well, Richard Jansma, I met after I graduated from college. I was living in Grand Rapids, a very boring office job that I got right after I graduated. And I met Richard at a poetry reading / workshop. And that's when I was just starting to write, not even seriously writing, just beginning. And he was so supportive and interested and enthusiastic.
He was such a warm person.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he became one of my dearest friends, one of my staunchest supporters. And he was the one that said, you must continue. You must, if you really believe in this, as I think you should, because I believe in this work that you're doing now, go on for your master's, go on for your MFA. And he really opened the door for me. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he died a number of years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it was in 1989, 1990. We were dear, close friends up until the end. I'm very honored to say he wrote me in his will. You know, I was one of the chief beneficiaries of his wonderful library of books that he had kept until the very end. And the whole sequence of those body parts happened because of writer's block. People can't believe this, but after I got my MFA in creative writing from Goddard College, I studied under Stephen Dobbins and Liesl Mueller and Raymond Carver and Donald Hall and Louise Gluck and Ellen Bryan Voigt and Tobias Wolff. I mean, you name them, I studied under them. Mm-hmm. And here, after 2 years of running this marathon of studying and writing and reading, I had writer's block. I graduated, I had this great degree, and the weeks passed and became months, and I thought, what is going on? And then I became pregnant for the first time with, happened to be my son, 9 months later, and I figured, what am I going to do to get out of this writer's block and to try to just absorb what was going on, the changes going on with my own body. So I decided, Linda, forget form, forget stanzas and line breaks and worrying about the conscious effort of how a poem flows. Do prose poems, block paragraphs, and what other subject but a body, and to reinvent a body that is not going to change, unlike my body at that time with the pregnancy that was really out of my control and not really my body anymore. So that is how I became enamored of writing that sequence. It was writer's block and also being pregnant for the first time, and it was just a matter of, let's reinvent this body.
And it worked,
and not in a scientific, medical / anatomically correct body. It is all metaphor. So Richard Jansma's poems, History of the Bowels, was one of the first poems that I did for the sequence.
Well, that was an eye-opener, too.
Thank you for mentioning that. Thank you.
What are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on a new manuscript called Amber Necklace from Gdansk, based on not only a bit of that ethnic heritage that I talked about earlier with my family background and culture. I went to Poland for the first time a couple of years ago, met relatives I had been writing to since I was 14 and never met them until I arrived at the Krakow airport, and they were there with arms of flowers to greet me. So spent 2 to 3 wonderful weeks there. Wonderful, overwhelming, poignant, scary, exhilarating, all in the same sentence time there, you know, in Poland. And so I'm working on a new manuscript of poems based on that trip, and I'll be reading some of those today.
Good, and I look forward to its publication.
Thank you.
Well, I think we're out of time now, and you need to get ready for your reading.
Thank you
for coming.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks.